on Radio 3 and BBC Sounds.
Time now is just after midday. You're tuned to BBC Radio 3 and next, Private Passions. And Michael Barclay's guest is the orthopaedic surgeon, Dame Claire Marks.
My guest today, Dame Claire Marks, was the first woman to become president of the Royal College of Surgeons of England in 2014, and the first woman to become the chair of the General Medical Council 5 years later. When she started practicing as an orthopaedic surgeon in 1993, there were very few women surgeons, and shockingly, that's still the case. Men outnumber women 8-1 as surgical consultants. So Claire Marks has overcome significant prejudice to reach the very top of her field. She's received a CBE and a DBE for services to medicine. But last summer, she announced her resignation from the General Medical Council after she was diagnosed with incurable pancreatic cancer. She's 68. In a public letter, she said, "Since receiving this news, I've been reminded once again of the importance and power of kindness in everything we do as doctors." That's a very moving letter, Claire, and I think it must have taken some courage to write so eloquently about your new situation.
Michael, thank you for asking me to have this conversation with you. Hearing those words again, actually, once again, makes me feel quite emotional, because I realise over my lifetime I've had this extraordinary career during which I've been able to show kindness to people, both the patients and the people I've worked with. And when I had this diagnosis, and it is a pretty cataclysmic diagnosis, I was so relieved to have that kindness from the people who saw me. So I wanted to express that to my fellow colleagues. I also wanted to let them know I hadn't been sacked. So,
Yes, the gross insult was of a different kind. How has life been for you since all of this came out?
Well, I had an extraordinary response to that letter, both from patients and clinicians who wrote to me and expressed their sympathy and sadness, but also a large number of people who were kind enough to remind me of my interface with them over the years. So it was a very affirming time when I needed a lot of support.
Now, music is the lifeblood of our programme today, and I wonder if it has helped to sustain you over these difficult months of cancer treatment.
The early stage of chemotherapy is so debilitating. I found that I would put something on and then within 20 seconds I'd be asleep, so that very often I'd wake up and realise I'd sort of missed almost the entirety of what I've been listening to. But it's now, when I'm feeling more energetic, that I'm able to once again really start to think about enjoying various musical genres. And of course, I'm terribly lucky because I live in Suffolk, and so there's a lot of music around to be had in the local area.
Well, you've brought a list which includes Verdi, Tchaikovsky, Brahms, Beethoven and Mozart. But as you've just prompted, it is Britten and the 4C interludes to Peter Grimes that where we're going to begin. Do you have a sort of geographic closeness to this music?
Literally, I live 15 miles from Aldborough, 10 miles from Snape, and it's a constant joy to be able to walk on Aldborough Beach. And during one of the breaks in my chemotherapy, we were lent a beach hut to go and stay in. And waking up with the beach outside and the sun rising over the North Sea is one of my sort of really good memories of one of these breaks. And this music really brings it home to me.
The first of the four sea interludes, Dawn, from Benjamin Britten's Peter Grimes, Andrew Davies conducting the BBC Symphony Orchestra. I mentioned earlier, Claire Marks, that as a surgeon you've had to overcome incredible prejudice in the medical profession, and I wonder what was the background that gave you that determination, that confidence. Your father came to England as a refugee from Nazi Germany, didn't he?
He did. He fled Germany in 1933 because he was able to leave with his parents. My grandmother was Swiss, but my grandfather, a public prosecutor, was one of the early people the Nazis came for. Unfortunately, they were tipped off and they managed to get out. But they then spent years fleeing through Europe until eventually my grandfather realised there was really no future in Europe at that stage. And my father was dispatched to England and my grandparents fled out eventually to reach America. So his was a very disjointed childhood, which gave him a huge amount of resilience. And he has always been one of these people whose motto has been to look forward. And that was something instilled in me as a child. You only look back to learn. You look forward for the future. And that's certainly a good lesson for me at the moment. My mother, a wonderful English teacher and a real Cumbrian stalwart, was a very levelling and grounded personality. And she just assumed that we could do whatever we want. She always wanted us to be the best we could be.
And she helped you at some point, didn't she, get going in the profession, even though she had some reservations about the blood and guts of it all?
She was extraordinary. She knew that there was a surgeon who lived round the corner from us in Coventry. And so when I was looking for some work experience, which because I had no medical knowledge or no contacts, she walked round the corner and sort of knocked on this chap's door and asked him if it would be possible for me to meet him and whether he thought that he might be interested in offering me some work experience. And so that's what's happened. And it just shows that if you really want to do something, you actually have to take the opportunities that are presented. And the rest is history, because he was actually one of the really influential people in getting me into surgery. But it was my mother who opened that door.
The next music comes from this period in your life, doesn't it?
Indeed. Often people say to you, what was the first record you bought? And in those days, with my pocket money, I went out and bought a lovely shining copy of the Tchaikovsky Piano Concerto and probably played it far too loud in the house and probably too many times for my parents to be appreciative of it. But I loved it. I loved the power.
Well, you can't not play this opening as loud as possible.
Thank you.
Kirill Gerstein was the soloist in that majestic opening of the Piano Concerto No. 1 in B-flat by Tchaikovsky, Semyon Bishkov conducting the Czech Philharmonic Orchestra. I wonder, when you were young, Claire, did you actually make music yourself? Did you play an instrument? Did you sing in a choir?
I did all of those things, but not very well, Michael. I played a recorder when I was really young, then progressed to a flute, played the piano as well, sang in a choir. But in truth, I was never really good enough. And the reason I've chosen this next piece was because as we sang it with the school choir, I realised the joy of being part of a team that together could make something happen.
But what you're saying conjures up for me very much an image of a surgeon and the team around her, the anaesthetist, the scrub nurse, all of those vital roles without which the surgeon would not be able to succeed.
That's absolutely true. And so you have to be able to bring it together with, as you say, the anaesthetist, the scrub nurse, to a certain extent the patient who, of course, presents themselves. And bringing that all together enables you to perform at the very highest point in your working life.
Well, the subject of our operation, if I can put it that way, is the Verdi Requiem, isn't it?
It is indeed. I have chosen the last movement because I remember so vividly, all these years later, this moment when you feel you're getting towards the end of that performance, you feel that it's gone well, there is a joy in having done that, and also that slight anticipation of the fact that as you finish this piece, you may never, ever do it again. And so you have to enjoy that moment and live in the moment.
We'll be right back.
domine de morte eterna, in die illa tremendo.
The finale of Verdi's Requiem, Claudio Abbado conducting the Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra, the Swedish Radio Chorus, and the soprano soloist Angela Georgiou. All the details of the choices of my guest today, Dame Claire Marx, on the Private Passions webpage. And if you go to Sounds, you can download hundreds of past programmes, including, by the way, a wonderful interview with the neurosurgeon Henry Marsh. I wonder if the reason there are still so few orthopaedic surgeons who are women, Claire, is that we have the idea, and probably the right idea, that it involves a huge amount of physical force.
That's true, Michael. You do need to be quite strong. And this reminds me of my first orthopaedic interview when I was interviewed at the Westminster Hospital back in 1981. And my interviewer made exactly this point. He said to me, he was quite an old man, he said, "Miss Marx, as I get older, I get quite tired. And during the operation, I quite like a young chap to help me hold the leg." And I just responded to him, "Well, I'm quite strong now, and I expect as I get older, I'll want a young chap to hold the leg." And we laughed and we became friends, and the rest is history.
So you challenged him nicely, which I think is quite a key to your success, to your life. In fact, I remember when I worked in a hospital going and watching an orthopaedic surgeon, he appeared to be wrestling with a python.
Well, there are moments that it feels like that, and there are times that you do need to either have a lot of strength, and I did in my early days, but also, as you go along, you develop techniques to overcome the moments and to make it easier for yourself. Mm. And we mustn't forget there are also quite a number of small men around who are not going to be that much stronger than we are. Mm. But back to your point about the challenge, it's something I've found over my years in surgery, that very often playing back what people have said is a very useful way of exposing a challenge that you might not otherwise want. And I think it also rather less aggressive, and people really don't like being challenged aggressively.
We're going to hear music from Act 3 of Rigoletto, a quartet all about loving perhaps the wrong people. I think you saw a performance in Switzerland.
Indeed. Yes, we used to go and, in his later years, visit my grandfather, who had returned from America to live in Switzerland. He didn't want to go and live in Germany after his return, but nonetheless, he was just over the border in Switzerland. And he used to book tickets for us to go to concerts. And so my first experience of seeing Rigoletto was indeed at the Basel Oper. And we went to see this performance, which I immediately fell in love with. Palpitare con un detto
Riccardo Chailly conducting the orchestra of the Bologna Municipal Theatre in the Act III Quartet from Verdi's Rigoletto. We heard the entwined voices of Luciano Pavarotti, Shirley Verrett, June Anderson and Leo Nucci. Of course, the extraordinary thing, Claire, about opera is that those complicated emotions, sadness or love, can be all articulated separately by different individuals, but simultaneously. There's no other art form where that can happen.
But it does happen in life, and that's one of the really awful things, that people don't express their emotions. People have the wrong conversations at the wrong times, and perhaps we all need to be able to sing in better harmony.
I'm glad to say that the next musing is chosen for a happy, indeed enduring love, because this is for your husband, Andrew. He's not another doctor, which is perhaps surprising given the hours you were working, but he was a neighbour, wasn't he?
Yes, Andrew was the man next door, and I had actually known him for 7 years because we lived in the same block of flats, and it was only at the end of the 7 years when I decided to move house that suddenly we got together. And this was in 1988, in the latter part of 1988, and we were married in 1989 after a very, very short engagement, because at the ages of he was nearly 40, I was nearly 35, it was quite clear that we wanted to spend the rest of our lives together.
Funny the way friendship can sometimes create a really enduring partnership. In other words, you'd really had time to think about each other, even if you hadn't thought in quite those terms.
I think falling in love with someone you actually like and trust and understand is incredibly easy. As a youthful person, you spend a lot of time falling in lust with people, and that's quite a different emotion.
Well, let's turn the conversation back to that happy time in 1989. And this Beethoven Ode to Joy had a tremendous symbolic resonance for you.
We were married in 89, and of course that is when the Berlin Wall came down, and they changed some of the words to Freiheit. And I think that we'd do well to think about those words now in the current political context in Eastern Europe. But for me, 89, my marriage, and indeed the years thereafter, have been just the most amazingly joyful.
Well, this is a recording made in Berlin in 1989 by a somewhat ailing Leonard Bernstein to celebrate the fall of the Berlin Wall. There are musicians from West and East Berlin and from the four powers who had opposed Germany in World War II. Bernstein alters Schiller's text in the Ode to Joy, replacing the Freude, joy, with Freiheit, freedom. Well, Bernstein certainly wasn't ailing in his interpretation, almost galloping with joy. Music from the final movement of Beethoven's Symphony No. 9, a recording made by Bernstein in Berlin on Christmas Day 1989, bringing together orchestras from Europe and America in an ode to freedom, celebrating the fall of the Berlin Wall. And had he known it, I'm sure, Claire Marx, your marriage as well. You yourself have taken German nationality now, Claire, as has your father, something you're entitled to as a family who were forced to leave by the Nazis.
It's an extraordinary thing that because of an act of parliament in Nazi Germany, my father was stripped of his nationality and was stateless for 4 years before he eventually got British nationality. But Germany have made a special case for such individuals, and he, at the age of 99 and 300 and something or other days, has decided that he would like to become a German national again, and they very kindly fast-tracked his application as they felt that he couldn't wait the 2 years it took me to do it. So that is indeed a very joyous event for him. I feel very strongly that I am a European. We have benefited so much in our association scientifically with the European bodies. And many people will know that the UK has led many of the European trials. We've been participants in many of those European trials. We benefit from the products that come through some of the European systems. So, for instance, the nuclear isotopes that are used in scans, in the sort of scans that I've had to have during my cancer treatment, the nuclear isotopes come through the European systems. And I can't help but feel that we are going to have to work so much harder to interface with all these bodies as a result of the political decisions that have been made. I know that we are stronger as part of a scientific body if we are part of a larger group. And certainly in my own cancer, which is rare, so there are only 10,000 people a year that are diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, I think we need the numbers to be able to make sense of this, because at the moment, 9,500 people a year die of pancreatic cancer, and of those people, almost half die in the first 3 months after diagnosis. It is certainly a very deadly cancer. So we have to do better. And the only way we will do better is by having data. And the bigger the data, the more likely we are to be able to make breakthroughs.
Well, perhaps we could carry on that conversation after our next music, which is something you encountered, I think, or certainly the soloist, in a prom in 1985.
Indeed. So Anna-Sophie Mutter, who is the most extraordinary virtuoso performer, and I think she has done an immense amount for teaching and bringing on young people, was a very young woman when I first encountered her at this promenade concert, and I was struck by this young person who was able to perform at such a high level, with, of course, the conductor bringing that all together. What a wonderful moment when you realise that however good you are, you're only as good as the rest of the team. But by being really good, you can really bring the whole performance upward.
Well, this is the Brahms Double Concerto, and Anna-Sophie Mutter is playing with the cellist Antonio Meneses.
Thank you.
Music from the third movement of the Double Concerto for Violin and Cello by Brahms, Herbert von Karajan conducting the Berlin Philharmonic, and the soloists were Anna-Sophie Mutter and Antonia Meneses. Can we talk a little bit more now about where you find yourself now following your diagnosis of pancreatic cancer? All of a sudden, last July, you were told you were terminally ill.
It was the 7th of July last year, and I had been working at home in the morning and walked up to the GP in the early afternoon and just presented with what I thought were just noisy bowels. And he didn't find much to inform our discussion, but thought that he should send me for a scan. So I took the tube to the scanning department, and I could tell from the body language of the ultrasonographer that he had found something significant. And I asked him, and he said, "It's not for me to say, but it's not normal. You need a different sort of scan." And I said, "Can we do that scan?" And he said, "We'll have to get the GP to authorise it." So we did that, and I had a different sort of scan, and the person reporting it I saw in the office, so I'm ashamed to say I sort of inveigled my way into the office and said, "I'd like to know what the scan shows." And this poor lady said to me, "I shouldn't be telling you this like this with you on your own standing looking at the scans, but yes, it is what you think it is." And indeed, I could see with my own eyes that this was a tumour in the pancreas with liver secondaries. And so I sat down for a few minutes, and then I took the tube home and told my husband. And our lives have changed. But that was last July, and I'm still here. And I'm well. I'm in remission. I don't know how long that'll last. But I'm enjoying life, and I intend to carry on doing the things that I want to do and that we, that's my husband and I, want to do as a couple in order to take what time we have forward and do the very best that we can with that time.
And does having little targets, I mean, even going to the studio to record our programme, our conversation today, do those targets help a little bit because you've got something to aim for?
Very much so, Michael, because this, of course, has given me an opportunity to have a lovely morning talking to you, to listen to some wonderful music, but also to help disseminate some of the information that is so important for everybody to know about this particular disease. And maybe there'll be some politician somewhere who might hear it and actually want to help me with trying to do something better for pancreatic cancer sufferers.
And the message I think you're really keen to get across out of all of that is that if it's caught in time, it can be very effective, chemotherapy.
Not only chemotherapy, but of course if it's caught really early, then surgery can be curative. And wouldn't it be just for a surgeon to say that? But surgery does still cure many cancers.
What? Because can you remove the pancreas? Surely not. What can?
Indeed, you can. You can remove the pancreas, and it's not surgery for the faint-hearted, but there are individuals who have survived without further disease for 5, 10 years. So if caught early enough, it can be curative.
I suppose it's the secondaries that are the problem.
The secondary is always the problem, but that's where chemotherapy and indeed some of the new technologies may be particularly helpful. But we have to get people into treatment much earlier. And so I know that one of the driving forces at the moment with Pancreatic Cancer UK is to have a single test that they can give to GPs so that people can start actually being diagnosed earlier.
And of course, I'm sure you would want me to say this, that whatever difficulties you may have, we shouldn't forget how difficult this is for a partner, for a husband, for family.
I think watching your family and your partner go through this is actually a very sobering process, because, of course, you at least know that you are being made better. All they see is your suffering. And I think this is where there are so many wonderful support groups and areas where people can go to for support that will provide telephonic support and sometimes in-person support. And I'm not just talking about cups of tea, but sometimes it can be more professional support.
Well, this brings us to the last music, and it's wonderfully soothing. It's from Mozart's Così fan tutte, the trio Suave se il vento, a message to all who are about to sail away across the sea. May the winds be gentle, may the waves be calm. Is that one of the reasons you love this music?
It's a very enjoyable piece of music, but I also realise that as you can't control the direction of the wind, it's really important to personally reef your sails. And so the calming seas ahead of us, or maybe the choppy seas ahead of us, we don't know what's coming. But what I do know is that as an individual, you just have to hope that you can sail.
May the winds be gentle, may the waves be calm. Claire Marks, thank you very much.
And thank you, Michael.
Colin Davis conducting the orchestra of the Royal Opera House Covent Garden. In the trio from the first act of Mozart's Così fan tutte, we heard soloist Montserrat Caballé, Janet Baker and Richard Van Allen. That was the final choice of Michael Barclay's guest on Private Passions today, Dame Claire Marks. And details of organisations offering help and support with pancreatic cancer and other cancers is available at bbc.co.uk/actionline. Private Passions was produced by Elizabeth Burke, and it was a Loftus Media production for BBC Radio 3. You can find details of all today's music if you search for Private Passions on BBC Sounds, where you can also download hundreds of previous editions. The programme returns next Sunday at noon, when Michael Barclay will be in conversation with the artist and activist Osman Yousafzadeh. BBC Radio 3, on 90 to 93 FM, digital radio and on BBC Sounds. It's 1 o'clock and time for the news with me, Jane Royce. The President of France, Emmanuel Macron, has cast his vote in the northern resort of Le Touquet alongside his wife Brigitte. He's up against the far-right challenger Marine Le Pen in the second and final round of the country's presidential election. Nearly 50 million people are eligible to take part, but turnout at midday was almost 2 percentage points lower than at the same stage in the last presidential election. The latest opinion polls show Mr. Macron is ahead, but the race is expected to be closer than it was 5 years ago. President Zelensky has vowed that Ukraine will emerge victorious 2 months after Russia launched its invasion. In a special address to mark Orthodox Easter at Kyiv's St. Sophia Cathedral, Mr. Zelensky said his country would not be destroyed and his people would endure. He's due to meet senior US officials to discuss further support for his country later. The Secretaries of State and Defence will be the top American officials to visit the country since the invasion began. The chairman of the Conservative Party has said removing the Prime Minister from Downing Street would lead to instability and uncertainty in the country. Oliver Dowden said Boris Johnson must prioritise the invasion of Ukraine and the cost of living crisis while the police continue their investigation. The leader of the Labour Party, Sir Keir Starmer, said the PM's authority was shot through and the Partygate scandal was stopping Parliament from tackling more important issues. A newspaper article has been criticised by politicians across the spectrum for claiming that Boris Johnson is put off his stride at Prime Minister's questions by the Labour politician Angela Rayner's legs. The Mail on Sunday reported that unnamed senior Tories suggested Ms. Rayner intentionally crosses and uncrosses her legs to distract Mr. Johnson. Ms. Rayner said the accusations were a desperate attempt to save the PM's skin and described them as perverted smears. Mr. Johnson said he deplored the misogyny directed towards her. At least 10 people have died after a tourist boat sank off the coast of Japan's northern island of Hokkaido yesterday. The Japanese Coast Guard is searching for 16 others after they lost contact with the vessel. BBC News.
Essential Classics on Radio 3.
Discovering music is one of the best things about this job.
We always leave a gap in the show just for your suggestions, and I am regularly amazed by the surprises you throw our way.
New composers, film scores, music for the theatre, and even your own personal stories and connections to the music.
It's the ultimate musical hive mind.
Whatever you're doing, make great music part of your morning.